Hello, hello. Welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Mr. Chris Hutting. Today we're going to be talking about jobs and the lack of ideas out of government and how to fix them. We're going to be talking a little bit about some remarks from South Africa's leadership about Zimbabwe's land reform. And we're going to be talking about people's efforts to solve municipal problems themselves. Also, we're just going to end off with a very brief mention of a new political party in South Africa, which is a bit of a lighter note. Anyway, so the Employment and Labour Minister, Norman Nkosazana-Smith, released a statement yesterday, noting with, quote, grave concern, the ongoing retrenchments resulting in heavy job losses. This comes after Arsenal Metal, which we've been talking about this story for a while, is shutting down its long steel plants, this is probably going to affect at least 3,500 direct jobs, but possibly up to 100,000 jobs down the line, which is just a complete disaster. The Ford Motor Company is cutting 474 jobs at two of its plants in the country. The tire producer Goodyear is cutting 900 jobs. And there's this sort of, you know, aura of confusion, of sort of, why is this happening, that one gets from this statement, and the sort of regret that business doesn't seem to want to engage with government on some of these issues. When it comes to trying to solve the problems, at the same time, the ANC is considering once again changing the mandate of the Reserve Bank, or at least it's once again considering. It hasn't changed the mandate. But it says that while currently the Reserve Bank has to target inflation and also create employment, the ANC says that the mandate should be changed to include development and transformation as well. Basically, it seems like they just want this as an excuse to force the bank to have lower interest rates in the hope that that will grow the economy. Chris, this is, you know, just shows how sort of much of a dead end in terms of policy making and kind of intellectual analysis of the problem we've gotten to. The entire solution from government is, well, we can lower interest rates and ask businesses nicely to stay. Or am I just being unfair? What do you make of this?
Well, I can accuse you of many things, Nicholas, but being unfair towards the ANC specifically, I don't think is one of those accusations that I could credibly level against you. So that's just based on actual economic reality, and not just in the last year or the last few months on the back of higher reciprocal tariffs from the US, for example. South Africa's growth, manufacturing, construction, decline has been years, if not decades, in the making. So on the back of unreliable electricity supply, ports and railways that don't function, rigid labor laws, threats to private property rights, of course, broadly a very anti-business, anti-investment policy environment has made it very difficult for any of those sectors and then the economy as a whole to grow and employ more people. So when you don't have economic growth and demand for things like steel, that in turn puts more pressure on an entity like ArcelorMittal, which also has to deal with imports from China. I don't want to underestimate that impact over the last 10 years or so that has impacted on emerging economies around the world. But you make it much more difficult for your domestic producers to be competitive if you saddle them with those shortcomings they have to deal with. So their own electricity supply, their own water supply, high crime because the police can't deal with criminals and prosecutions. All of that stuff just makes it, it guarantees
labor relations.
Yeah, labor relations. It just guarantees that this sort of thing is going to happen. The comments by the minister, I think, are genuine, which I guess, you know, on the one hand, you appreciate that they take, that they indicate this is how shocked they are. But on the other hand, you think, you know, you get this data every day. Are you hiding from it? Do you only acknowledge it sometimes? And then what do you do from there? What, if any, pivots do you take? If it now goes in the direction of changing the mandate of the Reserve Bank, you know, you're exactly right. You can lower interest rates. That might make borrowing and taking on more debt easier for some businesses and some individual customers or citizens. But it doesn't fix any of the supply side issues holding back economic growth. So you can get some bit of a handle on capital costs, but you can't, through changing the mandate of the Reserve Bank, get the ports to function, get electricity in a reliable space, get labor laws more in a more flexible sort of state, as it were, to benefit employers and encouraging hiring and upskilling and all of that kind of thing. It also doesn't encourage in any meaningful sense foreign direct investment, of which we need a lot given our domestic debt situation is so difficult. So again, even changing the mandate of the Reserve Bank, lowering borrowing costs, it might help the South African government with its high debt burden, but only in a marginal sense. It doesn't cut the public sector wage bill. It doesn't cut debt commitments to state-owned entities and guarantees like Transnet, SAA, the Post Bank, SABC, whatever else there is on the SAB, on the state-owned entity sort of ledger book. None of that stuff. It really is just another, I guess, populist note or an attempt at populist policy to say, no, we're going to change the mandate of the Reserve Bank and that will unlock magic high economic growth above 5%. If your fundamentals in a country, if your growth fundamentals aren't there, it's not going to, you can tinker around the edges with Reserve Bank independence, but it's not going to do anything for real economic growth.
Right. And, you know, just another thing that caught my eye, this is a story we didn't decide to cover about Malema's talking about his new comeback strategy to, you know, revive the EFF, which is not doing great right now. And it was just kind of amazing to me that he said, you know, as though he was brand new things, that the EFF's priorities to win back voters. And I think this just shows the kind of lack of new ideas and intellectualism in the entire sort of South African far left. Was to defend BEE, which government already is doing, and in fact is intensifying BEE. So, you know, that's no different from the ANC's policy. And, quote, proposing concrete industrial policy initiatives, particularly the beneficiation of mining and agriculture to drive industrialization and job creation. That is the only thing in economic policy the ANC ever talks about. And the EFF is now trying to claim that this is their great new idea, as though no one's ever tried it before. MK, the EFF, the ANC, that whole sort of ideological side of the spectrum just has no ideas. It's always, well, we must just have factories, but we also can't make it economical to open factories. And we must have big give outs of all the companies to BEE, and there must be very strict labor laws and high taxes and lots of regulation. But also then people must open factories and we'll give them subsidies or something. There's always like an industrial development plan or a strategy or a Indaba or Lekotla or something to like try and create this. And then it never happens. And the sort of thing is, well, it must be because we just didn't do it hard enough. And that's why we're losing jobs, is because every single time we run into one of these problems, government and all of its fellow travelers on that sort of ideological side of the spectrum go, let's just do the same thing, but harder. Any final thoughts, Chris?
Just before we started recording, you mentioned, so I'm not going to try and put words in your mouth, but you mentioned how when you don't need an industrial or beneficiation policy if your policy environment is conducive to business growth and investment. You don't need these shortcuts to just do the
right. Basics. If businesses can make money, they will open. Yes.
Some of the briefings that we've been doing as the CRA to some international clients in the last 2 weeks and sort of banking asset management, sort of financial portfolio space, a lot of the feedback is in the current global environment, there are many investors looking for opportunities. There's uncertainty in the US. That doesn't mean that growth in the US won't pick up or a sense of investment, you know, on a substantive level, but there's more uncertainty than there has been about the US previously. They're looking for opportunities in emerging markets. If South Africa can get one or two of these very basic things right, there is serious interest in South African assets, in investing in fixed infrastructure in the country. But you need to get your handle on things like, never mind the policy stuff, but things like crime and infrastructure, you know, and this unsexy governance work, and it's not going to, you know, be trumpeted and whatever all over the place. But getting those things right, the exponential growth that South Africa potentially has, if we can attract some of that investment, is actually staggering. But we don't convince investors to come here, so domestically or internationally. We don't give them any reason to take a punt on South Africa, to take a risk on South Africa, not at this moment.
Yeah, exactly. You don't even have to get everything right. I mean, it's better to get everything right, but you don't even have to get everything right. India, China, Turkey, these are countries that have very big governance problems, some that are much worse than South Africa, but they get enough right in their economic policy that they have big growth numbers. Okay, speaking of getting things wrong, President Cyril Ramaphosa was recently in Zimbabwe attending an agriculture show there, and he said some sort of really kind of flattering things about how wonderful the agricultural show is. And, you know, it kind of almost makes me jealous because I've been to agricultural shows in South Africa, but this one is really amazing. And, you know, it wasn't anything. He didn't say, oh, you know, we love your policies and we're going to copy them, or you guys are doing the right thing exactly. But he was kind of warm towards Zimbabwe's farming sector in a way that probably wasn't justified. And this prompted chief economist at AgBiz, Wandile Sihlobo, to write a short response saying, quote, "I'm seeing some comments about remarks made by the South African leadership in Zimbabwe over the weekend congratulating the country on its efforts to revive its agricultural sector. The comments by South Africa are expected, given that this was a political event. The reaction from fellow South Africans to the speech highlights that Zimbabwe's land reform was a significant failure, causing economic pain to many people. This is a truth, and Zimbabwe's agriculture has not recovered since its ill-advised land reform plan in the early 2000s. This is something that's gotten quite a lot of international attention. The Zimbabwean government has been trying to attract back some of the farmers that it drove out of the country back in the early 2000s. You know, it hasn't really been that successful. I think there's been a little bit of movement, but not much. There's still some disputes over property rights and compensation and things like that. But the bottom line here is that once you do this level of destruction, once you cut up property rights, even if you restore them, people are a bit hesitant to come back. Not that Zimbabwe's restored them, but, you know, Zimbabwe's efforts to reverse the problem have not really met with success. So I don't know, you know, why is the president sort of swanning around talking up Zim's agricultural industry, one which we have, I think, very little to learn from except lessons of what not to do?
Well, it's an area of comfort, right? And we're seeing this across the board in the ANC's and the government's continued foreign policy engagements generally. President Ramaphosa recently visited Japan for South Africa / Africa Japan trade and investment summit. We saw before that the ANC attending the summit or the latest congress of so-called former liberation movements in Africa and sub-Saharan Africa before the Japan trip. So we're seeing broadly the government leaning into these areas of comfort, the traditional allies, those where difficult questions aren't asked, where you as one representative, you can talk up the wins of your host country or of other liberation movements. It's not political parties. You're not governing. You're bigger than that. You're a liberation movement. You represent the will of the people. It's the will to power, if you will, in a way. I think that's partly what's at play here, the psychological aspect of we're getting pressure from the US specifically. Things are uncertain. Domestically, we haven't delivered and we continue to face a lot of pressure. If you can take polling by the DA most recently, but also internal ANC polling, which points to how much more the party is going to decline in the next year's local government elections and probably in 2029. So you're feeling pressure from those avenues. So you lean into where you're safe and you're coddled and your arms are held around you and you're still what you were, what you imagined yourself to have been 30, 50, 100 years ago.
Yeah, no, that seems to be the only real kind of explanation for this sort of stuff. All right, let's move on to our last story. Second last story, rather. This is about Harry Smith, or the municipality around Harry Smith called Maluti Apofong, which has had a troubled history in recent years. It had major water problems, which were partially alleviated for a time by citizens of a group calling themselves the Water Heroes stepping up and repairing some of the water infrastructure after the municipality had let it fall apart. Then there was a divide in the ANC in the municipality, which resulted in a group of ANC councillors breaking off and managing to get themselves elected to council, this group called MAP 16. And then they went on to form a coalition government with, I think, the EFF and another small local party. And I think the Freedom Front Plus, I'm not sure. Anyway, Things, though, have not really improved much in the municipality. Water problems continue despite the best efforts of residents to kind of get around the problem and fix government failings. And things like roads are deteriorating. There was this story in Groundup, which shows ordinary South Africans having to pick up the slack of government. Metsi Matosho village, which is in that municipality, has had its roads left to just completely decay. A local who lives in the village called Mozart Lamini said that he reckons the roads were last fixed between 1990 and 1992. The village was only established in 1987, so it's not even that old. Local people in this village spend their time fixing the roads. Unemployed people work on the roads every single day, including even gogos and older people pushing wheelbarrows, digging drainage trenches, and then the employed people in the village help out on the weekends to sort of supplement labor. The resident who was talking about the condition of the roads said, quote, "We have to walk about a kilometer to reach transport, and some people are too old for that. Buses and taxis stopped coming here because the road is too risky. Ambulances and school transport also struggle to get through. When you go to the executive mayor, she tells you to go to the municipal manager, who then sends you to the speaker." And Chris, you know, this is unfortunately a story that many rural South Africans, I think, know. It's interesting to me for two reasons. One, ordinary people stepping up to try and do the things that government has failed to do, which is very noble. And I think, you know, there should be an encouragement of more of that. But also, without the kind of changes to policy, without allowing sort of structured private businesses and things to get involved, without allowing, you know, kind of alternatives to the state, you know, ordinary people, just by doing work themselves, particularly if they're very poor, can't do this by themselves. You need to actually have a political solution to the problem. You can't just, you know, roll up your sleeves and do your best.
And very often when South Africans have tried to do this kind of thing, they get punished by the state. So there'll be, I mean, in municipalities, including in Johannesburg, where residents will try and fix potholes and that kind of thing, and the government will come and tell the charge them, try and invoice them, or threaten them with court action and that kind of thing. So it really, I think this most recent example was in Four Ways, where a residents association picked up trash and did that kind of community cleanup, and they were effectively stopped by or dissuaded by a JMPD. So it also filters through in those kinds of ways. It does say something about the sort of South African spirit and South African resilience, but I think it is really the sort of stuff we talk about on a daily basis on the Daily Friend and on other platforms. You know, the myriad economic and policy failures of the ANC, this kind of thing really drives it home. When you don't implement the right ideas, when it's not backed by the right kind of principles, then you see this breakdown of service delivery, of where public officials realize they serve at the pleasure of voters, of residents, that they get paid through taxes, so they need to deliver services. You see over time this breakdown of the economy and of society and how it manifests in these kinds of examples. So one does want to take off one's hat to the people sort of rolling up their sleeves. But I think on the other hand, also, you have to really press home on the government and on these municipalities. You guys are, it's not even just failing from a fiscal point of view, a governance point of view, it's moral, I think, failings that we're seeing at this point in time.
Yes, I just went to double check myself, and it seems that since I last read about the municipality, its political situation has changed, and the ANC is actually back in control of it, which I'm sure is there's political instability has been blamed for the problems, and I think, yeah, obviously that's probably part of the mixture here, but the bigger problem is just you know, officials not being held to account properly. But, you know, good on the people of that village for doing what they can. Very briefly, we're just going to mention one last thing. Very heavy watchers of the news will know of a former ANC MP called Boy Mamabolo from Limpopo, who had a bit of a reputation. He got himself into the media a few times. He was accused of threatening to fight various people, including Julius Malema at one point. And then he was eventually removed from the ANC's election lists in 2024 to parliament over questions the ANC said they had about his matric certificate. He has now announced that he is resigning from the ANC and he's going to be starting his own political party. He initially attempted to register the party as with the name Mandela for President, which I think he might be trying something there, which apparently was blocked. Released a very angry statement in response for that called, "When I tried to move on, you blocked our move to establish a political party. Your objection was approved by the IEC because you clearly want me to be a failed politician. I therefore cannot tolerate this abuse anymore and I want out." He said that now he's going to register his party under the name I Was Born to Win. And actually kind of like his reasoning here, every South African was born to win. The ANC has turned itself into a party of the elite. So we are saying to all South Africans from different backgrounds, uneducated or unemployed, you were born to win. Let's go together and build a better South Africa. Yeah. So I don't think Born to Win is going to have a very successful next election. You know, maybe I'm wrong, but that, you know, as in terms of a starting message, it's not a bad one for it. But yeah, any thoughts on this one, Chris?
Just very briefly, I haven't checked the betting platforms yet, but I'll take a bet that I think this party will get more votes than Mr. Floyd Jivambu's new political movement. So I'll put my money on that.
Oh, that would suck for Floyd. Anyway, that's all time we have for today. Thank you very much for listening. We hope you enjoyed the show. We'll see you tomorrow on The Daily Friend Show. Cheers, everyone.
The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.